Greetings, wrestling fans. This is Jim Fannin, the guy you love to hate, or maybe you just hated my guts, period. I have the pleasure of leading you into the Mid-South Memories podcast. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the individuals making the statements, and they do not necessarily reflect those of Nick Manoa, Mike Ruff, or the BNMVS podcast network. This podcast is intended for mature audiences only. The IWA Mid-South shows covered on this podcast contained adult themes. Violence for the sake of violence. Bloodshed for the sake of bloodshed. Explicit language. We're on these shows because if you ain't hardcore, you ain't shit. So that just leaves one thing left to say. Nick Manoa, start the podcast.
Guys, gals, non-binary pals, we in here. Pro Wrestling's BFF, Nick Manoa, joined by Mike Ruff of RuffFigures.com for another episode of Mid-South Memories. Mike, how you doing, bud?
I could not be better, Nick. How about yourself?
I am doing pretty well. I'm getting over my hospital visit and getting over my strep throat. Got two big shows this weekend, so I figured I'd, pop the cherry, so to speak, and bust out this this Mid-South Memories podcast. We will be doing April Blood Travelers 2018, but we have some follow-up. Sometimes we have follow-up, sometimes we do not. So here's some follow-up from the Morris Mayhem episode. I missed Dusty Rhodes when listing biggest names in IWA history. It just slipped my mind. So Dusty Rhodes came in October of 2004. And then for the anniversary show, him and Ian against Steve Stone and Chris Candido with our good friend Jim Fannin ringside. And then in December of 2004, not 2005, like I said, Terry Funk came in. And it was a six-man tag of BJ Whitmer, Steve Stone, and Chris Candido with Jim Fannin against Ian Rotten, Danny Daniels, and Terry Funk for the main event of that show, Merry Funkin' Christmas. The announcements for Morris Mayhem were on the television, like we mentioned, that I used to do it in my school. So they actually got to see Axel cut that promo, that Friday before the show. That Saturday. And then we have some notes from Jim here. He said, in a small world kind of thing, the planted fan, Charlie the Booster, started working with his best friend at the Morris Hospital. And Chris and Charlie stopped by and was like, hey, this is my coworker, Charlie. And Jim was like, hey, weren't you the guy that we did that angle with at the high school? And he was like, yeah, that was me. So that was like a couple months ago. So like, how crazy is that? 22 years later, you're still seeing this. And this is from Jim. Mike Allstott wasn't brought up just because he made it to the NFL. It's because he beat Morris in the playoffs in 1990 to start the rivalry. And it was the state championship game that me, Ian, and Jim went to in November of 2001 between the two schools. Morris lost when they were ruled out of bounds, like that promo that Todd cut. On what would have been the game-winning touchdown, Coach had a picture of it hanging in his office showing clear as day the wide receiver was in bounds, so everyone was still pissed, which is why I got great heat when Todd said he was obviously out of bounds. This is a note from Fannin. I was actually afraid for his life when the football team came sprinting down from the bleachers to the guardrail to yell at him.
I feel like the entire city of Morris is still upset about that.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And how great was 2004 for IWA? Within months, Dusty Rhodes and Terry Funk.
Right. Yeah, and we started running Highland in like fall of 2003. And that was always like the honey hole, we called it, because, for some reason Ian thought, we'll run Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, with Saturday always being Highland. And even if there's 40 people, 30 people, 20 people there on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, there's going to be, you know, 250, 300 people there on Saturday, which, you know, then you had to use the money from Highland to pay all the bills that you didn't pay on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So I don't know how, you know, that really made sense. But Highland always had great names brought in. Like we said, Dusty, Terry Funk, Sabu was like a semi-regular, Kid Cash, AJ Styles. And, you know, a lot of these guys weren't, you know, the wrestlers that they are now, you know, Samoa Joe, AJ Styles, you know, Bryan Danielson, stuff like that. But I mean, those Highland shows were like a super show every single month. Like, you know, it was going to be Chris Hero against American Dragon, but on the undercard, you have Homicide and Eric Cannon on a one-on-one, and Super Dragon's randomly in. And, you know, those Highland shows are definitely really special shows.
I love how Ian with the booking kept everything pretty fresh, too. Like, there were so many first-time matchups, or at least, you know, not-in-a-long-time matchups or first-time to IWA matchups that were, like, it was kind of amazing that after a while he could still have fresh matchups with booking kind of the same guys, just a different rotation.
Right, absolutely, yeah. The first, you know, Joe Hero match was in that building where the dueling chants really made, I guess, their debut in independent wrestling. No one had ever seen chants like that in wrestling before Hero and Joe. I mean, these fans for 30 minutes just back and forth. Let's go, Hero. Let's go, Joe. The anniversary of that match is coming up here in a couple months. So that's very exciting. But we fast forward all the way to April 2018, April 25th. The Memphis, Indiana flea market, Memphis, Indiana, which is about 16 miles from Louisville. The flea market no longer in business. They, when we left the Memphis flea market, there was an issue. Basically, what it came to be was with the IWA rent, they were basically keeping the lights on because, you know, people weren't going there to you know, buy shitty fucking baby strollers and whatever else people were selling at the indoor flea market. And then they were definitely not there on the other side of the flea market. There was a classic car museum that you paid, you know, $5 to go and look at cars. And it was just like this random guy's collection that he had stored there. So like, that's not making, you know, crazy money. So, you know, when IWA Mid-South's not giving them, you know, $2,000 a month to run shows in there, then you know, you don't run business anymore. And they've since shut down. I don't think anything is running out of that building now. I think it's for lease. So you know, piss on Memphis, Indiana. At the time in the world, the top movies: A Quiet Place, I Feel Pretty, which I have no memory of, and Rampage with Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Have you seen any of those movies?
I have not.
I saw
Place is supposed to be good, right?
Yeah, yeah, with John Krasinski.
Krasinski, yeah. Jim.
And I think, Jim from The Office. I think there's a third one coming out. I haven't seen one of them. I did catch, like, Rampage coming on, like, TV one day with the kids, like, over summer break. And was like, oh, you know, turn this on. And they were like super into it. And I was like, you know what? For a Dwayne The Rock Johnson action movie, this isn't too bad. I thought it was all right.
And that's based on like a video game from
yeah.
Days, isn't it? Yeah. Like, yeah. A big old white gorilla. Yeah.
Yep. The
I think the
song...
other one that you mentioned was who's the comedian? The girl? The blonde girl?
Amy Schumer?
Yes. I think that's hers. Which is why I've never seen it.
Okay, if it's Amy Schumer, I've definitely never seen it. I looked up, you know, whatever the movies was, and I was like, I've never even heard of this movie. So, yeah, we should watch a Quiet Place and see if it holds up.
It is an Amy Schumer movie, confirmed.
Okay. So, yeah, I'm definitely not watching that shit.
Nope, sorry, guys.
Right. Yeah, this will not be... Manawa and Mike review Amy Schumer movies. I'm sorry.
Go check out Rampage though.
Yeah, Rampage is pretty decent. And I think it might be another Rock movie, but QT Marshall is in as like a background actor as one of like the feds
in just randomly.
I think in Rampage, Rampage, if not Rampage, definitely one of the Rock movies where he's wearing a khaki shirt and, you know, cargo pants.
How did he get that gig? Just looking like a generic dude?
Yeah, I guess so. I think he was just like in the area or something.
That's awesome.
The top song of the moment was Nice For What by Drake, which I also have no memory of.
Yep. Not a Drake fan though.
No, I mean, I know like the stuff on the radio. I don't know if this was on the radio. Like, I know the popular songs. I don't know the deep cuts. I don't know if this is a deep cut, but no memory
of if you heard it.
Yeah, probably. It's probably like he probably says another word in the chorus, and that's what people call it instead of like the song title, you know.
Yep.
At the time, AJ Styles is your WWE champion since November 7th of 2017, which is a crazy statement to say, just knowing AJ Styles and knowing that, you know, he was the TNA guy, and then, yeah, oh no, he's been WWE champion for fucking, you know, a few months by now.
That was the first run, or was that his only run?
I think it was his. I think it was his first run. And then
that came out.
Right, yeah,
was that Rumble? Right, was his debut.
The Rumble, yeah, the Rumble was his debut. I believe in 2014. So he had already been there a little bit. And this April Blood Shower show happened 2 days before the first greatest Royal Rumble show, which happened in Saudi Arabia. So AJ goes to a double countout with Nakamura on 4/27. The tag team titles are vacant due to the Nicholas fiasco at WrestleMania with Braun Strowman.
Or due to the disinterest in tag team wrestling at the time.
Right. Bray Wyatt and Matt Hardy as the Deleters of Worlds would win them in Saudi Arabia. And then Alexa Bliss is your current WWE Women's Champion.
Wow.
Obviously, no AEW at the time or anything. I could have done TNA, but I did not. Some inside baseball here. This is the last April Blood Shower show. After this show, we did not ever run another one. Obviously, Kentuckiana known for the crazy weather. And, you know, April showers bring May flowers. So April Blood Showers. The first one was in 1996. It is actually the first ever IWA show.
And it was titled April Blood Showers?
And it was titled April Blood Showers.
Huh.
And speaking of the Kentuckiana weather, that first show, it's April of 1996, and there is a crazy blizzard. And there's only 30 people or so at the show. So, you know, people always use the October anniversary for the first show, which is actually the opening of the old Kmart building. That's why we use it as the anniversary. It was the start of running like weekly shows. So that's why we count it as the anniversary and not the one-off April Blood Shower spot show that we did. 17 total April Blood Shower show, and then there is a 7-year gap between 2010 and 2017. And, you know, April Blood Showers was always a good one. We knew that, you know, there was going to be some kind of blood, some kind of craziness, some kind of death match, because obviously you need blood for blood showers. Any comments about any of this random stuff I'm saying, Mike Ruff?
It's surprising that the first recorded IWA show was titled April Blood Showers. I'm not sure that's what I would title the first show that I ever ran.
Right.
But hey, that's cool. It fits along with the theme, so cool.
Yeah.
the Memphis flea market. I think in the opening, Ian's opening promo, he says $2,300 a month.
Yep.
Which is pretty surprising to me.
Yep. Yeah, he was doing like eight shows there a month, which would make rent each time like $287. So at one point he was like, you know what, I'll just start running per show. So he was like, I'll just start running nine times a month, which would make the rent $255.55 each show. Which still,
he would drop the dues for the month and then just run as many times as he could or wanted to within that month.
Yeah, I don't know if it was like he paid them every show he paid them rent, and you know, it was like that, because I doubt highly that he had, you know, $2,300 a month, you know, on the first right. every single month. So right. I think that's why he ended up switching to doing nine shows a month, because, you know, it was $30 less than running eight shows. But you know, on this show, we open up with and this always bothered me about Ian, and you know, he's cutting a promo on the lackluster crowd to the crowd that's paid money to be there that evening.
Yep.
Why the fuck are you burying the paying customers? There's quite a few fans that stop coming just because of stuff like that, or you know, just comments like that. Because, like, you know, if you don't appreciate my support, why should I give you my money every month?
Right, and it was kind of awkward in the beginning, because he was like, hey, if anyone wants to be my financer, you know, we can keep this thing running, but otherwise, we're shutting down.
Right, yeah, he's, you know, talking about, you know, May 31st, the day before his next birthday, will be the last day the IWA is in business, and yada, yada, yada. What ended up happening was, there was an issue with the Memphis flea market. We left there and went back to the Jeffersonville Arena and started like a run there until the very end of IWA's existence. Even during the pandemic, we were running shows with, you know, 25 people allowed in the crowd. And then, you know, if the COVID numbers were down in the area, they would boost it up to 50 people or 75 people. And then if it went back in the red, they would, you know, oh, you can only have 25 patrons, you know, in the crowd. And, you know, there was quite a few times during the pandemic where we had a sellout because you could only have, you know, however many people. I believe the highest we got was like, it was like you could have 100-something people in the crowd. And, you know, we were like, oh, we sold out. But, you know.
How is any money made off of 25 people capacity?
I mean, 25 people capacity, he was doing like, I think doing $20 tickets. And then, you know, obviously they're buying concessions and.
Right.
He was like doing merch specials and stuff like that. So, I mean, it was very low budget shows, but some money was being made for sure. And I think Tony was giving him a deal on the rent, because nobody else was running at that point. So Tony wasn't making any money for rent. So
they
had some kind of working agreement. So he starts the show off with bad news. And then even more bad news, Nick Gage is not in the building. He missed some flights. He will be there tomorrow because we had a live stream on Powerbomb TV, now known as IWTV. And Nick Gage was in the building the next day wrestling Aaron Williams. So Nick Gage also not there for the evening.
That goes back to your comment about kind of burying the fans or your active patrons, is he kind of did the same with Nick Gage, right? In the beginning of the show, he talks about, oh, Nick missed a flight, whatever. And then later in the show, he gets on the mic again and talks about, oh, I don't understand how people are missing flights and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, dude, like, this is the guy that you need to get people in the building, and now you're burying him again.
Right. At that point, Calvin Tankman comes out as the IWA World Champion and pretty much says, like, well, Nick Gage isn't here. I'm fucking going home. I have no one to wrestle. That brings out the replacement of Shane Mercer, who hadn't been around in quite a few months in IWA Mid-South at that time. So it is signed Shane Mercer versus Calvin Tankman. And then to end the segment, Ian basically says, when things get fucked up, we fuck things up. And, you know, as much stuff as Ian says that may or may not be true, it was always true when, you know, a big name couldn't make it, or, you know, a card had to be shuffled. It was like a sense of pride for the IWA locker room and everyone involved to make this the best show that we could with what we had for the people that paid their money. I mean, there's been multiple times, oh, so-and-so can't be there. Oh, you know, Nick Gage missed his flight, or Matt Riddle missed his flight, or whatever it may be. And then you got, you know, cruiserweights jumping off the concession stand wall to give the fans a moment they'll remember, instead of, you know, well, shit, we already gave Ian our money. We don't want to ask for a refund. We'll just sit here and watch this, you know, random show in Memphis.
And it's an opportunity, right? Whereas all eyes would normally be on Gage, it's the chance to take those eyes and put them on you. And you may be a nobody, or you may be someone that nobody's thought of in that light. You know, like the guys who step into the deathmatch that aren't deathmatch guys and, you know, outperform what the expectations are. And it just kind of it opens the door for a whole new, you know, a whole new interest in that individual. So I think a lot of the guys see that as an opportunity. Hey, you know, we expected this guy to be here. He's not here, but the fans are still here. So let's go make them remember my name.
Right. Absolutely. I am the ring announcer for this evening. And, you know, I had started doing that just out of necessity. Ian was, before we moved into the permanent IWA arena in the Memphis Flea Market, we were in the booth or the area next to that arena part. And Ian would kind of do the ring announcing, and he would mess people's names up and not know shit. And so I took over, and I hated doing ring announcing. I hate the sound of my own voice, despite being a commentator and a podcaster and, you know, whatever. But at this point, I didn't hate the sound of my own voice. I had learned some cadence. I did not scream into the microphone like a lot of indie ring announcers do. So I was not, and I had my super card of notes. So all I had to do was, you know, put the match in order on my notes app and then fill in the information, and off we went.
So, how much research do you do, like, with the ring announcing? Like, is there conversations with each wrestler before the show? How do you want to be introduced? What's the, you know, what are the nicknames you want me to hit? I know you have some interesting nickname stories, especially from some of the guys at the end of the IWA run.
Right.
The cheek clapper.
Right. The Colonel of Clapping Cheeks.
That's great.
Yeah, I would just, you know, if I hadn't, you know, introduced them before, I would go up and, you know, whatever you want me to say over the PA for your ring introductions. And they, you know, they would go over whatever. You know, I was the only person that ever did the full long form Mance Warner intro with all of his nicknames that, you know, we added to every week at IWA, essentially. Yeah, so I would just, you know, if I got your info once, I would always do it on my phone instead of writing it down. That way I could just plug it into my archive of, and I still have that archive of, you know, even people that only work for IWA like one time. There's a guy named Aaron Von Baron who did one arena show from like Nebraska. But since his name is Aaron Von Baron instead of Aaron Williams, his name is first in my super card of, you know, information. So I've seen that guy's name 800 times, and I've seen 3 of his matches. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the first match we have 8-Ball Eddie Only, the Gifted Chase Holiday, and Spitfire Sage Phillips, myself and JC Rotten on commentary for this one. Eddie and Chase in the junior heavyweight divisions of their careers here. We mentioned on commentary that Eddie only made the trip alone because originally RSP was going to be on the show. Something came up. And Eddie only made the 5-hour trip from Cleveland by himself just to be in this opening contest. Pretty basic match, but, you know, everyone got to do some cool stuff. Sage wins with the SP driver, the double underhook brainbuster, which he murdered young Eddie Only on. And he picked up the win with that. Eddie Only no longer active in the ring. His last match was November 13th of 2022. Both Chase Holiday and Sage Phillips still active on the scene today. Any thoughts on this one, Mike?
I don't got much. I thought the SP driver was a cool finish. Kind of like a cradle double arm DDT, I guess.
Yeah, kind of like a double underhook brainbuster. He was a big Davey Richards fan. So Davey Richards had the DR driver. So he just made his the SP driver. I don't know how often he still breaks that out, but I wish the Rome cam had panned down for the impact because they kind of missed the impact. But the snap and the drop looked killer on what you did see. After that match, we have Sage Cannon against Rob Killjoy. Sage is a graduate of the Black and the Brave Wrestling Academy. He, at one point, was looked at as their most prized student. And he has since quit wrestling. So, you know, he is, I guess, living life. I believe he's had a child since his days in wrestling. Last wrestled in 2019. Cage Match has 105 matches of his career. 39 of those were in IWA Mid-South. So it would be Sage and Shane Bender and Chase Holiday, sometimes Steve Manders, sometimes Jossie, whoever from that Iowa area would come down for these shows, and, you know, they would do a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or, you know, whatever the case may be. Sage Cannon, 39 IWA matches, 13 wins in 39 matches, and then Rob Killjoy, 19-year veteran of the sport, just recently had a great showing during WrestleMania weekend at the Clusterfuck at Sean Henderson Presents at Action Wrestling's Dean as the Ugly Sucklings with White Mike, and then as the Ugly Ducklings with White Mike and Colby Carino. We'll see White Mike later on this evening. Sage walks around the ring flipping off the fans. And I forget who it was. Someone during the old Kmart building days. But they were like, if you have to come out immediately, start flipping off fans, like, you need to do some work. You need to, if you can only get heat by flipping the bird, you gotta work on some stuff. He comes out flipping people off, and then you hear Amanda Roberts instantly starts with the Sage Cannon sucks. And if Amanda was giving it to you, you would hear that the entire match. Did not matter who you was, you know, Reed Bentley, John Gray, the referee, it didn't matter. And especially if her dad James was there egging her on, you know, the whole time she would be giving it to you. Sage Cannon quacks at Rob Killjoy while doing like the crawfish lobster hands. And then he goes, it's not a crawfish. And then on commentary, I go, I don't think he knows his animals. I think he's confused. He might be kind of stupid. And it made me laugh so hard, popping myself for a stupid comment that, you know, 30 people, if that hurt. another good little match. The finish happens with a swanton to a bent over Killjoy that I call Shadows Over Cecilia because he hails from Cecilia, Louisiana. Any comments on this one, Mike?
Again, I like the finish, and calling it the Shadows over Cecilia was great. Brought me back to the delirious day, so that was cool. Yeah, good finish. Solid match, I think. I don't know much about Killjoy other than the fact that he's been around, you know, a long time and is a well-seasoned veteran on the indie scene. The referee for this match is SPO, so that's cool. Cool to see him there. Yeah, that's about all I got.
Yeah, and we talked about this on Off the Record, and we're like, yeah, we don't really have a lot of information on these matches. They're just, like, good matches, but, you know, sometimes that's what you get in wrestling. You just get a good match for no reason.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you watch all the matches and you enjoy them at the time, and then, you know, they may not stick in your memory forever, but you were entertained throughout the duration of the show, and that's kind of how the show was. The last show we did, the Morris Mayhem show, that's more of a memory fest. It's a lot of stuff you kind of remember and it sticks with you for a while. This one is just entertainment for the sake of entertainment. And then, you know, on to the next one, kind of.
Right, yeah, definitely just solid match after solid match after solid match. Next up we have MJF versus Steve Manders. MJF comes out the curtain. The only guy in IWA that's actually worth a damn. MJF is back, baby. MJF was living in Indianapolis at the time. Because originally he's from Long Island, New York, and he was trying to get bookings for, like, AAW and all these Midwest feds, and they were like, if you were closer, you know, I'd use you every show. I just can't, you know, spend the money to fly you out and pay you, yada, yada, yada. And then he was like, what if I moved to the Midwest? And that's what he did. And that just shows you how bad somebody wants it, you know what I mean? And he was getting good bookings in the Northeast, living in Long Island. But he wanted to be at that next level. He wanted to, you know, be on the AAWs, be on, you know, the promotions that were around, you know, with moving to Indianapolis. He was doing Rockstar Pro every Wednesday. He was doing IWA. I think I said we had 10 MJF matches for his career. 9 were in the Memphis Flea Market, kind of scattered throughout this run. I believe he made his debut in December or November or maybe even October of the previous year. And then when he didn't have anything else going on, he would pop in and, you know, do an IWA show. He actually did the show the next evening as well. This is still Iowa Hawkeye football player Steve Manders. He is not the one called Manders yet at the time.
Yeah, I have in my notes Manders Jock Edition.
yes, that was his thing, and I think he just recently did it like a podcast for like past players and what they're doing now. So it's funny to see like his football pitcher next to like his wrestling pitcher. During the ring introductions, never serious Nick Manoa, just
my favorite part of the match.
out on the floor, now on the ring apron, and then MJF says, wait, and then gets in the ring. So, I posted a clip on social media if you follow me anywhere. MJF gets in the ring, so I go in the ring, out of the ring, in the ring, and then I do the introductions. Just stupid stuff like that. You know, there's, like I mentioned on the social media posts, you know, sometimes there's only 40 people there. You got to keep yourself entertained more than anything sometime. And that's what we did. And, you know, some of those sparsely attended shows, like just, you know, making ourselves laugh, making ourselves, you know, popping ourselves.
But how perfect is that with MJF's character, too? Because he's that one that wants to be difficult. And you say he's in the ring, he's out the ring, you know. So just playing along with that is hilarious. And I think, like you said, MJF at this point is a couple years into his career, and he's still kind of cutting his teeth and figuring his character out. And I think moments like that helped him develop to the character that he has now. And I'm not a huge MJF guy myself, but I can appreciate the stuff that he does. And without those kind of moments growing up on the indies, I don't think he is where he's at now.
Right, for sure, yeah. Yeah, I mean, he definitely cut some teeth in IWA, cut some teeth at a Rockstar Pro in Dayton. MJF wins with an armbar after a nut shot. Picks up the win with a submission. 3 for 3 on solid matches for this show so far.
Agreed. And, you know, we got a little glimpse of the typical MJF character where he's talking shit to the fans the whole time, calling him fat marks, calling him this, calling him that. And, you know, you'd think that earlier on in the career he'd be a more subdued version of what he is now, and he wasn't. He was exactly the same. Like, what you see on TV is what you saw on this show with, what, 50 to 100 people, if that, in attendance. So I thought that was kind of cool that, you know, his character, and I think that's what he's known for, right, is making his character authentic.
Right.
And even back in the day with a smaller crowd than what he's used to now, he's doing the same exact shit.
Right, and I think he was even worse back then because there's no filter. You can just say what you want, and we'll get into that during the main event. After that, we have an IWA Mid-South Women's title match as Alley Cat is the challenger against Shotzi Blackheart. Alley Cat had recently turned heel at this point, joining up with Hudson Envy, and she's kind of being a devious scoundrel in this match. Shotzi had won the IWA Women's title at the Miss Independent show, which I believe was like the week before, because we did Miss Independent and then we did the Candido Cup like the week before the show.
What was the premise of the Miss Independent? Is that just
a women's tournament? Yeah, it was a women's tournament to reintroduce the IWA Women's title. We hadn't had a champion since, like, Mickey held it in, like, 08. So, we ended up using the WCW world title that Ian had put an IWA sticker over that Dingo had during, like, 09. And Dingo retired with the belt. And then Aaron Williams beat Dingo for the IWA world title in a title tournament in Memphis, and we did not have a new title at that time, so we used that title. And then we got a new IWA title, the Red Strap. The Lady in Red, as Mance Warner called it. I gave that to him, by the way.
Good.
So we had the Lady in Red, so we did not have a woman's title, so then we just use that title for the women's title. We use the old WCW replica. And then later on, we got custom titles down the road.
The notes up in smoke.
Right, right. Well, the women's title and the tag titles, I don't know where they are. I know one tag title is in Cincinnati with my good friend Piper GK Fam. I don't know where, I think the other one is in their possession still, and I don't know where the women's title ended up. I think Alice had it last, so Alice Crowley may still have the IWA women's title.
We gotta call AJ Francis to find these things.
Right, yeah. Well, you get Mick Foley and Booker T and Lita now, and AJ Francis got fired. The couple notes I have for this one, Allie dumps Shotzi right on her head with a German suplex. Just absolutely kills her. And then I apologize for the feline AIDS call on commentary for her lariat. A friend online was like, she should call it that. And she was like, I will never call it that. And then I took it upon myself to call it that. But yeah, I don't have a lot of notes on this one.
No, I think Allie looked super green. I think she's only a year in, right, or something like that.
Yeah, she's fairly new in wrestling at this point. She had also moved to the Midwest from Texas, so she was trying to get all the reps that she could at the time. So,
yeah, just a little bit of awkward movement and stuff. Shotzi is actually someone that's from my neck of the woods, Oakland area. And did a lot of stuff with like Hood Slam and Dark Sheik and that group. So when I knew, I think even at the time, like back in the day, we had, you know, just exchanged pleasantries, you and I, and you had mentioned something about this, and I was like, wait, that's someone from out here, and now they're kind of, they got their run going out there, so that was cool to see. Just, you know, not even moving up the indie ladder, just moving sideways to different areas and getting some more experiences is always cool.
Yeah, it's always, like, people always say, like, it's like Texas and, like, California, like, the states are so big, but, like, it's kind of like a bubble of its own, where, like, if you don't get out of that bubble, like, you can be the best wrestler in California and people will never see you unless you get out of that bubble. And Shotzi's another one that moved from California to the she moved to Indianapolis as well to get more reps in and to, you know, really make something of wrestling. And, you know, obviously she has done just that.
And that says something about not only the area, but IWA specifically, is that is a checkpoint in a lot of successful careers, is do your time in IWA, get some experience there. There's good matches to be had there. There's a lot of shows to be had there. There's a lot of guys that have come through, guys and gals that have come through and, you know, made it out the other side as a super successful, huge name in wrestling now. So I think it's always been seen as kind of that checkpoint in your career. Like, if you want to be successful working up the indie ladder, you got to check this box.
Right, for sure. Yeah, it's definitely, I always told guys when they would come in, especially newer, you know, younger guys and gals, like, you're not going to make a lot of money here. You might not make any money here, but you'll get dope matches. You'll get reps. You'll get time in front of the people, which you can't replicate, you know, anywhere else in you know, physical fitness or anything like that. You can't do a Stairmaster and have people cheering you on. I mean, I guess you could, but I don't know if, you know, Planet Fitness probably frowns on that. So, you know, you get your reps in, you get, you know, veterans, you know, at one point, like Todd Morton and Mitch Ryder and Bull Payne, and then later on Tracy Smothers, and even, you know, people, you know, might want to cramp on Ian, but he did know pro wrestling. He did know what this area liked in pro wrestling. He did know what made a good pro wrestler, even though, you know, his run as a mainstream wrestler was very short-lived, was very uneventful in terms of, you know, major success. But he would take the time and teach Shotzi how to do this move or how to, you know, hit this way instead of this way, because it makes more of a sound and it's safer and it looks better. And, you know, there's countless times, you know, you would see, you know, just guy like Steve Manders would go and sit next to Ian and pick his brain every show he was at just to get that knowledge. And, you know, there's stuff you see nowadays from Steve, from Mance, from all these guys that, you know, did their time. And as crazy as that is to say that phrase, did their time at IWA Mid-South, but still using those tools and tricks to this day to be a fantastic pro wrestler.
And, you know, if Ian liked you, he's going to put you in spots that you shouldn't be in. We've talked about that before. He's going to give you a huge veteran name when you're quite green in your career. And he does that if he likes you. And you're not going to get that most other places. You got to, you know, put in the time, put in significant, you know, work in that area or with that company in order to get put in those spots. And I think Ian was among the quicker bookers to do that. Like, he would see somebody and be like, all right, stick him in there with Chris Candido, you know, in 2004, right, or whatever it may be. So that's something that I think a lot of people kind of caught on to after a while, was if I go there, I can work some big names, get those big names on my resume, and maybe look to the next step. So, yeah.
Right, absolutely. Up next, we have the IWA World Title match, Shane Mercer, the challenger, against Calvin Tankman. Like I mentioned, this is Mercer's return after a few months away. Early on in the match, Tankman puts Mercer on top of Rome Cam David in the front row, and it's just like chopping Mercer, and David's just like stuck. He's still, David was our Rome Cam operator from, I want to say, pretty early on in 2018, once we went back to the arena, until the very end. He even did those empty arena deathmatch shows that we did and stuff like that. David's a great guy. Just recently retired from Humana after however many years. So shout outs to Rome Cam David. I doubt he will ever listen to this, but a great dude. He still does the Grindhouse shows every month. So it was funny to see him get involved there. At some point, Calvin like grabs a chair that only has three legs. Did you notice that?
Yeah.
I was like, how the fuck is that standing? And it stood pretty well. And I believe Danny Trahan, the security guard, ended up swapping out the chairs because he saw that it was messed up. And then after he grabs like a cabinet. Yeah, like a cabinet door or something. Like a shelf, or it looked like a TV stand shelf or something. You know what I mean? Like the one that went all the way across. And he swings it one time and the wind catches it. And it's like a very disappointing like thud. And, you know, it's still, you know, thudding on Shane Mercer's back, but the fans start laughing at him.
Laughing.
And Calvin's like, all right, you motherfuckers. So then he fucking really wallops him with it. And, you know, on commentary, I'm like, even though the wind caught that, it still probably fucking hurt. And they're laughing. And it's pissing him off. so then, you know, not satisfied with that piece of wood, he goes and gets an old ring board from the trash corner, the junk drawer of IWA's arena. Just everything. There's shopping carts. There's old barbed wire. Just, you know, Ian hadn't got a dumpster yet. So everything's just thrown in that back corner. It was like being in a war zone, trying to get to that commentary booth every week, you know, not stepping on a gusset plate or getting barbed wire, you know, caught on your jeans or Zubas or whatever. So Calvin goes and gets this old ring board, which are heavy as fuck anyway, because, you know, they go in the ring, they support, you know, people like Calvin Tankman and on the ring. So it's stiff as fuck, it's heavy as fuck, and he's moving it with ease and props it up outside the ring between two chairs. And Mercer's able to get a... I didn't know what they were going for when they were on the apron. I had no memory of this. So they're on the apron. I'm like, God damn, what are they going to do? They're going to hurt each other. And then it ends up being a sunset bomb from Mercer to Tankman through that board. So... I appreciate a move that goes perfectly right with no one getting injured. So I did appreciate that. It's myself and Eddie only on commentary for this one. Eddie and Tankman had kind of a short feud where Eddie had beaten Tankman in a fluke, and then Tankman got his win back the next week by just whooping his ass. And, you know, they were still kind of feuding at that point. Tankman wins with a Tankman driver, which is a Fire Thunder driver, the Rikishi driver, after throwing powder in the eyes of Shane Mercer. And the way this bag of powder explodes, I don't know where Calvin had it, but it was under so much pressure. It just exploded everywhere. Got Mercer in the eyes. He hits the Tankman driver. It's over. Eddie only immediately is like, lost that could have been powder bleach. What is going on? And I was like, I had never thought about that in wrestling, you know? So when he said that, I was like, man, that's a good call, man. I should add that to the repertoire. So yeah, you know,
it's one
I'm
of
like,
those oh, ridiculous things like yeah. the green myth, right? It's acid.
Right,
no, it's
right,
not.
Right. Yeah.
We all know it's not.
You know, powdered bleach. I'm like, oh, it could have been baby powder. It could have been gold bomb powder. We don't know what it is. And it's anthrax. Oh, my God.
Powdered milk.
Brutus the Barber Beefcake was here, and he dropped one of his baggies. That was on a... and Dark Side of the Ring. I know you're behind on this.
I'm behind.
He was a toll operator, and someone he dropped a baggie, and people thought it was anthrax, and he tried to claim it was headache powder or whatever.
What is headache powder?
There's like powder you like mix in. You can like take just the powder, or you can mix it in a drink, and it and it cures your headache fast.
Is that a thing?
It's a thing.
Oh, shit.
And anyway, they both him and his old lady are like, "Oh yeah, it was a supplement or a headache powder or whatever the fuck." And then Greg Valentine was like, "You want the truth or you want the bullshit?" And then he's like, "It was cocaine."
Just dog them out. Zero viewers were surprised.
Right. As Calvin goes to the locker room, I plug powerbomb.tv, which, like I said, was the original indie wrestling TV. Up next, we have the Indian strap match between Shane Bender and J.C. Rotten. Did you have any comments on Calvin and Shane Mercer before I...
The Tankman makes Mercer look tiny, doesn't he?
Right, yeah. This was before Tankman had lost a little bit of weight. So he's probably, close to his biggest at this time. I believe this was before the WWE tryout, which is when he really started to slim down a little bit. Definitely looking a lot better now than he was then.
It's huge. Not even in a bad way. Just a big ass dude.
Right, for sure.
We did get our first. We'll do the counter later, but we did get our first and only. If the action's coming your way, you got to get out the way, and that was by Eddie only. So, Eddie gets the gold star for the show for dropping one of those in there.
Did he say that? Because I know I maybe he
did,
and then I said it over the microphone.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened.
As Tankman put Mercer on top of Roman Cam David, like, hey, these guys will fucking run through you.
Yeah, so we'll call it two because he dropped one on commentary, and then you hit it on the house mic. So
yeah. I need to put that in my notes, my all time notes. Shane Bender is in a dress because he lost a loser must wear a dress match, obviously, as one does in pro wrestling.
Very common situation.
I forget the context in which I say this. Oh, we're talking about Shane Bender having a belt. And the whole match, Eddie Emily's like, I think that's my fucking belt.
The whole match.
And then I say on a commentary that Shane Bender is a potential gear bag goer thrower. Which I don't believe Shane Bender is, but, story.
Could have been. It was funny because, on TV, you could barely see it. But the way that Eddie goes into detail, it could have been, I think that's my belt. And you're like, I don't know, it could be any brown leather belt. There's lots of brown leather belts around. And it's just like, it's a conversation that should not have happened at all and lasted the entire match. And I guess the rationale for the belt was to keep the dress from going over his head, which was the case his last match where he got beat.
Yes, he got hockey-fighted with the dress, and then I think he got rolled up, so to prevent that happening again. Which, we're telling stories here, baby. People want stories in indie wrestling. This is week-to-week telling stories here. And
it's multifaceted. Not only did he think to use a belt, but he didn't have one, so he even got one.
Right, for sure.
I'm going through in bags.
Yeah, being a gear bag goer thrower. JC gives the fan Robert the belt to allow Robert to beat on Shane Bender. I forget what the issue was. I think Shane Bender said something shitty to his wife one show, so then Robert hated Shane Bender after that. So he would always flip him the bird or talk shit to him as he made his entrance. So, Robert was really fired up about whooping the ass of Shane Bender, and the first couple shots were weak, and then he got him that last time with a real good one. And situations like this is why there will never be another IWA Mid-South. You will never, ever in 2024 on see a wrestler give a fan a belt and hold his opponent for the fan to hit the wrestler. The wild, wild west we were at IWA Mid-South.
Lost art.
Yeah. A bunch of nonsense.
Speaking of art.
Uh-oh.
Can I segue from art into J.C. Rotten's gear?
Sure, man.
Very interesting look for JC. He comes out with the skinny jeans. He has wrestling shoes on. He has one kick pad. And immediately, as soon as the strap match starts, those strap matches smacking each other with a belt, right? He takes the shirt off. What a savage.
Right.
He's like, yeah, I don't need this. Yeah. Cool. Added to it, I thought.
F that. I'm
not afraid of getting his ass whooped with the strap.
Yeah, I think we mentioned it on off the record, but after the match, Ian says that the strap had cost like $215 or something.
He got down to the cent to $215.
Yeah, a bunch of nonsense after this, talking about IWA maybe shutting down. Ian's like, I'm not just giving it to you. You'll have to pay me for it, which is like, how fucking carny can you be?
And the fans noticed it too. Did you catch that? I don't know who it was. But someone
like,
said something. Ian's like, hell yeah, I'm not going to give it to him. I'm that big of a dick.
Right.
There's a point in the match where they're kind of coming and going in and out of the ring. And I think Bender, he hits, I think it's on the seat while he's like climbing through the ropes to get into the ring. And they end up like wrapped around the ropes.
Yep.
And like, they don't know. Trying to sell the stomp, but also direct Bender on how to undo this knot that's through the ropes. Oh my god, it was funny.
Like, if it was me, I would have just took the strap off and then put it back on. But, you know.
They had to, like, retrace their steps and
put
the thing in reverse to get out of the rope. It was quick, but it was funny.
Right.
There's another point where JC, he does, like, the Batista thumbs up and thumbs down, and I was super pumped for, like, a Batista bomb. But he just choked him out with a strap instead.
Right. Yeah, after their, I mean, we kind of mentioned it in the timeline of stuff. We end up leaving the flea market and running weekly at the arena until we close the doors. And we find Connersville at some point and all that fun stuff.
There's a lot that could be said about the post-match promo, but I don't think we need to.
I don't think.
Something that kind of hit me, though. While JC is on the mic, he is very reminiscent of Ian. Like, the way that the cadence of his speech, what he's saying, it's very, like, young Ian. Like, early IWA, fire up the crowd Ian. And I thought that was kind of cool to see, you know, someone who's kind of been raised in his image, at least as far as wrestling persona goes, to deliver a promo the same way that his old man did was kind of cool to see.
Right. Yeah. The IWA tag team titles on the line. The Gymnasty Boys of White Mike and Timmy Lou Retton defend against Firearms of Trigger Trey Miguel and Hot Fire Myron Reed. There's a bunch of silliness in this one, a bunch of great wrestling, a bunch of fun stuff. Me and Rob Killjoy are on commentary just having a blast. At one point, they spam WWE finishers. And I've isolated this clip before, shortly after SPO passed away, because he was involved in it. I think he refereed the match. But White Mike does a double choke slam to Miguel and Myron. And he does the cane taunt for the fire. And then he like yells at Ian at the front table, which is, you know, 10 feet away. Like, do we have fire? Do we have money for fire? And no one could, you couldn't see Ian, but me and Rob could see Ian. And Ian had no idea what was going on. He was so confused. And it made us laugh so hard because he's like, what is happening? Like, what are you talking about? And we were just laughing hysterically at Ian having no idea, you know, because Ian's like turned away mostly from the ring. So he probably didn't even see what happened. And if he was turned toward the ring, he's half blind, so who knows if he even saw any of it. So, very confused at White Mike's antics.
Just imagine Ian hearing that, like, oh, hey, Ian, we got fire. And Ian pulls, like, the flash paper out of his pocket. Like, hell yeah, we got fire.
Right. Yeah. Just absurd. All four of these guys still going at it today. Trey Miguel, obviously, Impact Wrestling, TNA Wrestling. Myron Reed going all over, recently made his return to TNA as well as part of the Rascals. White Mike, like I mentioned, had a great WrestleMania showing, and then Timmy Lou Retton, now known as the Infinite Man, T-I-M. He's done some Paradigm Pro Wrestling and is out of the Ohio area nowadays. Always a pleasure to see him and to see what kind of wrestling that he will be innovating and originating in his matches. Any comments about this tag match, Mike?
Yeah, there's a couple things that kind of caught my interest. In the ring intros, when you're kind of announcing, I think, Myron's, he's like gesturing with his hands. Did you catch that?
I did not.
With like small gestures and on commentary.
Yeah. He was talking about the package size of the Gymnasty Boys, if I'm not mistaken. And yes. I was like, Myron, you can't be doing that, man.
You can't do that. yeah, a little words of wisdom from Nick Manoa. So that was funny. I think Timmy is also introduced as Mr. 8x10 Inches.
Yes.
Is that a nickname? Like a regular
yes.
thing?
Yes. That was his nickname at the time, yes.
That's pretty good. And then, you know, just to, like you said, a lot of fun stuff. The couple WWE finish spots. Myron hits like a ridiculous Swanton and then gets up and does like the Jeff Hardy dance. And it killed
right.
me. I was dying. It was so great.
That was a great. He fucking crushed him on that Swanton.
Yeah, he did. It was nice. and it was like, you know, without the dance, I'm like, okay, that's just, you know, something that he has in his arsenal. And then he got up into the dance and I was like, oh, I see what's happening here.
Right.
Yeah. At one point, White Mike hits a random drop toe hold on the outside and it's terrible. Like it like barely connects. And whoever he did it to kind of just like stumbles or tumbles down. And then he grabs a chair and puts him in like the Boston Crab with the chair, which was funny. But it was, like, just out of nowhere. No kind of, like, momentum or anything. They're just standing right. there, and he dropped toe holds, and it yeah. Something that you wouldn't really notice, but it popped me, so that was cool. like you said, super fun match. Finish was cool. At the end of the match, I think they were setting up for possibly the next week
yep.
or next night next, match.
Next
between,
night, yep.
That's right. Between Trey and Myron. Just a little bit of dissension in the yes. ranks of those two to set that up. So, yeah, like you said, fun tag team match. I'm not terribly familiar with this era of Myron and Trey tagging. I know them now, and right. Myron is ridiculous now. Like, the stuff that he does is crazy. But to see them tag at this time, which was, what, like 6 years ago? Yeah, they were ready to move on already.
Right. Yeah, they had... The Gymnasties had just beaten Myron and Trey in the finals of the Candido Cup, which Myron and Trey put their IWA tag titles on the line. I forget the timeline of tag titles when it came to Myron and Trey tagging, because for the OG or the return of the Candido Cup, the titles were introduced and Myron Reed and Shug D won the tag titles. Yeah, so Myron and Trey defeated Elliot Paul and Pat Monix in March of 2018 for a online stream of Powerbomb TV. And then, you know, lost the belts to them on 420, so they only had the titles for a little bit, did Trey and Myron. So yeah, I was confused at how they got together as a tag, but I believe Desmond Xavier and Zachary Wentz got signed, so, and they weren't making a ton of IWE shows any longer, so that's why we put Myron and Trey together as a team there. And then your main event, Fans Bring the Weapons. You got to have some blood for April Blood Showers. We got Brad Cash versus Dale Patricks versus Mance Warner. Full Mance Warner entrance here, hugging all the fans, kissing babies, having Pat clean his shoes, you know, all the fun stuff, all the classic Mance Warner. A lot of stuff you don't see nowadays with his new attitude, I guess you would say. It is myself and MJF on commentary. I had no memory of ever doing commentary with MJF. And MJF, like we said, he's like 3 years in. He's just burying everything. He's burying Brad Cash. He's calling his pump kicks Fat Sheamus. He's calling him Ian Rotten's stepson. Just really, letting him have it.
Deliverance.
Yeah, calling him Deliverance. At one point, he's like, I'm like the Joey Styles of IWA. And I was like, oh my God, don't mention Donald Trump. Because Joey Styles was supposed to be the new voice of Evolve, I believe it was. And he made a joke on like a pre-show about Donald Trump and instantly like got fired. So Max puts over my timely joke of Joey Styles getting fired.
He only partially put it over though. He said it was almost funny or half funny or something.
Right. Like that. Right. Such a son of a bitch.
Made it even better.
Yeah, me and Max had some fun stuff back and forth on commentary. I just didn't put his shit over, so then he would just try harder to be ridiculous or whatever.
It was a good give and take.
Right, right.
Especially with his character and the BFF persona that you have.
Yeah, I just wasn't selling for anything and just like, oh yeah, oh yeah, cool. MJF calls Dale Patrick's a surfer dude because he does the hang loose or the hang ten hand sign. That. And he fucking loved it. He was like, I don't really like Dale a lot, but out of all these people, he's my favorite because he does the hang ten hand sign, and I really love that.
And he's like, hey, do the surfer dude hand signal. He's my favorite wrestler.
A lot of stupidness in this with all the weapons. There's light tubes used. There's a brain buster on a shopping cart. Mance Warner's bleeding buckets like always.
There's a rocking horse too.
Yeah, I didn't know what Brad was going for with that rocking horse. I was like, what realistically can he do here? And it just didn't pan out at all.
You should have given him like the Bubba Bomb kind of thing.
Oh God. Oh my God.
Up his anatomy. Yeah, anyway, sorry.
Dale wins with an ace crusher through the tubes on Brad Cash as Mance is down on the floor. Any comments about here? About this match?
And the tubes were already, like, broken? Kind of?
Yeah, they weren't.
I thought it was super dangerous. I was like, oh my God, someone's gonna die.
Right, yeah, they weren't. I don't think they had busted all of them. At one point, someone picks up a water jug bat, which is, like, commonplace in like, deathmatch wrestling. And Max is like, what the fuck is
what
that?
What is that?
He's really confused.
I couldn't tell if that was him being him or if he had no idea what that actually right. was and had never seen it before.
Well, like, these, Max and 20 years earlier, CM Punk and Colt Cabana, would be out back of the Charlestown building, like, back of a pickup and, like, watching the hardcore matches and just being like, what are they doing? They're burning each other with candle wax? What the fuck? What have we gotten ourselves into? Crazy death match here for the April Blood Showers card. Like I said, everybody's bleeding. Dale Patrick's was, like, kind of heel at this point with Shane Bender and Ace Perry. Shortly after, it was Loser of the Fall leaves IWA, and Dale Patrick's had been the Loser of the Fall, and Ace Perry sacrificed his IWA career to allow Dale to stay and be in King of the Death matches. So Dale's kind of floundering at this point, being a heel, and he comes out and he's like, let's hear it, guys, and you're like, okay, what's going on here? And I don't know if that's like a lack of direction from Ian or Dale just doing whatever he wanted or what, but for the most part, I would say this is a solid show. I think everything's good to great. Nothing that was super offensive to me. Let's see what we have for the...
There was a point in that that main event, Nick, where you had mentioned that both Mance and Dale were trained by Billy Rock. And
yes.
Again, I think, I mean, it's hard to know, right? And that's kind of his charm is MJF was like, who is Billy Rock? And you're trying to put him over like, oh, he was in the Takara Young Lions Cup. He was in the TPI. And he was like, oh, but were they trained by Curt Hawkins like this guy was?
Right.
It was pretty funny. Just like not only completely burying Billy Rock, who was like super respected in that region. And if Max is living in Indianapolis, there's no way he doesn't know who Billy Rock is. And then just to drop, you know, oh, WWE superstar Curt Hawkins. It was so un-IWA that it was hilarious.
Right. We already got the, if the action looks like it's coming your way counter, that we are at 3, counting the 2 this evening, for overall, if the action looks like it's coming your way. Nick Manuel hit the music. Right, I know. I don't know if people really... I think it's an Ian-ism, and then, you know, I just started using it when I would ring announce or be calling the time or whatever, and then I would just say it. I would say it at shows that weren't even IWA if I had a microphone, just to, you know, make sure nobody got ran over.
Even if you didn't, you're just walking around the crowd like a crazy person. If it's coming your way, you gotta move, get your shit and move.
If I know your name, I will scream your name to move if there's a dive coming towards you.
My favorite one that you do is the hold the fucking ladder. That's my favorite.
Right.
From any point in the building, you'll hear Nick, if the referee or somebody is not assisting with the ladder spot, you will hear him like the voice of God coming over the PA system. Hold the fucking ladder.
Best theme of the show, in your opinion. You got any?
We're going to go with a classic with Mance's Simple Man by Shinedown.
Yep.
The better for entrance music version of Simple Man. And it was kind of, to me, watching it, it's kind of a tribute to the Chris Hero entrance because it has the ridiculous intro, and then he comes around and hugs every single person in attendance. So I felt Hero vibes from it, so that's what it gives it a little bit of extra.
Yeah, it's a shame that more people didn't get to see this era of Mance in person because, you have people like Cactus Jack or Terry Funk or whoever say like, you know, it's because of you fans that I'm able to do this and blah, 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 blah. But like that was real with Mance and those IWA fans. Like those fans believed in him when he won the title. They believed in him when he was fighting, you know, against Anthony Henry or Matt Riddle or Nick Gage or whoever the fuck he was fighting. They were cheering for him to you know, get up and make that comeback and fight. And it was just something special. It's a moment, you know, trapped to time, and you know, you'll never have anything like it ever again. You know, the relationship of Mance Warner and the IWA crowd, you know, that's a reason.
And, you know, even like the long form intro, it just adds a little bit of something special to that character, and throwing all those nicknames out there and just having fun with it. It made him like super endearing with the crowds. I thought too.
Right. Yeah. Anytime he came to the area, whether it was for IWA or not, and I was at the show, I would do the intro. I did it for a Wrestling Revolver show. I did it for the last Paulcade when he was in that 5-way scramble or whatever the fuck it was. And, you know, that's what those fans, that's what they want. They want the full Mance experience. Obviously, with his new persona now, I don't know if we would get that nowadays, but he seems kind of busy. I don't know if he's making it back to Kentucky anytime soon.
You'd be like the bro that tries to put it over and he cuts you off and buries you too, so I think it would work.
Right. Match of the night or moment of the night, you have anything?
Ooh, not really.
Right. There's nothing that really stands out. Maybe moment was the funny MJF ring introduction or the double chokeslam spot, just because it's, you know, absurd and stupid and hilarious. Like I mentioned, the matches are all solid to good to, you know, some of them are even great. And that's kind of what we kind of always shot for at IWA Mid-South. As long as there was nothing, you know, just crazy bad or just not very good. You know, if it was good, if it was, we would take decent to great. So that's what we have for April Blood Showers 2018, the last April Blood Showers show that we ever did. Any closing thoughts on that one, Mike?
No, I don't think so. I think one thing that I did want to ask you about, though, was the knee pad up, knee pad down nets thing. Do you know what the origin of that was? Like, where did that come from? When did that start?
I think he just started doing it, and, you know, he would, you know, his knee pads would shift during the match, and, you know, he'd pull them up, and then he'd expose the knee once again, and it became a regular spot as the fans, you know, he would do it more and more, and then the fans got into it, so he would, you know, made it a regular spot in his moveset, and, you know, at one point it was his finish because, you know, that was the kill shot. That was like his Randy Orton punt kick. If he was able to hit that knee trembler, it was curtains for you.
It's the setup for it that makes it special, too. You know, we've seen that with, you know, in like WWE, where you have guys like, I don't know, we'll use Drew McIntyre as the example, setting up his big kick. And I think Mance got that and had something special there with that, as stupid as it was.
Right. And it's all about fan interaction and, you know, fan participation. So you got the 3-2-1, or you got the, you know, yeet, or, you know, whatever you may have. And that's what Mancer had with that knee pad up.
The fans were into it. Super into it. Still are.
Yeah.
Or maybe not in the last few months, but up until then.
Yes. Do we have any questions or anything?
Oh, I do. Let me pull it up. Give me 1 second here. All right. We have a question from Ken from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. He wants to know, Nick, of course it's for you. Nick, what is your opinion of the best year of IWA? What is your opinion of the worst year of IWA? I think that maybe is open to interpretation, what best and worst means. We'll go with, you know, quality matches, hot shows, best roster. There's a wide variety, I think, there that you could talk about, probably. And we've seen good, we've seen bad. We've talked about good, we've talked about bad on this show, just in the short existence of our show. But I think maybe you could elaborate on that pretty well.
Yeah, obviously people want to go towards, you know, the 04 era, just because that was when, you know, IWA was doing those super shows, and, you know, TPI 04, the greatest tournament of all time. I really feel like IWA was at its best when Ian knew who he was going to have for the roster, and he had a regular building. Because that way you could build on stuff, you could build people up, you could build...
That's something you've always said, too, is booking of the weeklies or the episodic wrestling has always been top-notch.
Yeah, and, you know, obviously, when you're running month-to-month, you can do some stuff, but, you know, who knows if the fans are going to remember that the next show. But, you know, running weekly, and I don't think it was at this point yet, because we kind of had a falling out with IWTV or with Powerbomb TV, and then we wasn't on there, and then we came back. And once we came back to IWTV, it was like, I want to say like a 2-week delay in terms of shows. So like if you wanted to watch IWA episodically, you could, because when our editor Jeremy, Prophet of Ash Video, on Twitter would edit the shows. He would make an edit for IWTV as well. So we would get a DVD edit and we would get a IWTV edit that they could, you know, instantly put up and people would be able to watch it, you know, as soon as they put it up. I really, you know, it sounds corny to say like, oh, this is the best crew we've ever had, but I really felt like the end there with, you know, Logan James and Tyler Matrix and Kevin Giza and Lucas Jacobs and Jake Chris and Aaron and John Wayne Murdoch and, you know, all those people, Billy Tipton and, you know, all this young talent and guys that, you know, had done a little stuff in, you know, OVW or had done a little stuff in their career. And now they're here in IWA and they're doing this and just putting on great matches. There's countless matches I saw during the Jeffersonville Arena days with Logan James and Tyler Matrix and Kevin Giza and Lucas Jacobs and Pat Monix and Aaron Williams and all those guys that are just knocking it out of the park every single fucking show. 40 people saw it, 50 people saw it, 60 people saw it. And, you know, IWA was always like the redheaded stepchild in terms of indie wrestling. Like, people hated Ian, so they would never give us a shot, or they, you know, they didn't want the, you know, the money from their hours watched going to Ian, so they would just not watch it, or they would bootleg it, or, you know, do whatever. And these guys are just having incredible matches and doing incredible things. And there's so many times I would go in the locker room and be like, stop going this hard. You're killing your body. You're putting bumps on your bump card and you should be saving it for a bigger show. And that's crazy to maybe hear from someone that was like a, you know, I guess second in command at IWA. But I didn't want these guys to get hurt in the Jeffersonville Arena when they had a booking for Pro Wrestling Revolver or you know, a dark match for Ring of Honor or you know, a UK tour or whatever they're doing. I was worried about them getting hurt, you know, impressing the 50 IWA fans and not making those other shows because, you know, oh, they took this DDT wrong or they hit the guardrail when they did this dive or whatever. In terms of dark era of IWA or worst era of IWA, you know, there's always some stinkers in terms of shows when you, you know, have other indies running and you can only, you know, you only have a certain pick of whoever's around or there's been quite a few times that Ian has canceled shows because he didn't have enough quality talent, he thought, to run a show worth giving people their money worth, essentially. So I would say probably the dark era would probably be like the end of 98, 99, just because we didn't have a permanent building. You know, we didn't have like a video camera to even film shows at some shows. And there's not a lot of footage between like 98 and 99. So I would say that era is pretty bad. The like 2009 to like 2013 era of IWA is really rocky because they were living in Illinois at the time and he was running in Peoria at the Bellevue Plaza, which was like a terrible building. It was like half a basketball gym, halfway house, and just sketchy individuals live there, and it was just not a good neighborhood. And so that's another dark era of IWA. I didn't go to a lot of shows there. I went to like a King of the Death match. I went to like another random show with Bentley, and it wasn't until like 2013 when they moved back down this way and started running again that, you know, the, what am I trying to say, reputation of IWA started to get a little bit better, because that first show we did in June of 2013, we had like 400 people there because people hadn't seen IWA in so long, and we had all these veterans, and we had, you know, Sabu, and, you know, that's when people started taking note of IWA again, and we did another near sellout, like, a couple months later, and then it kind of started to fizzle out, and, you know, then we went on to Jammers, and running Colgate, and stuff like that. So I would say probably the rocky period between 2009 and 2013 is really like the dark days. Even though, you know, there's shows with Jon Moxley on it, there's shows with Mustafa Ali on it, you know, all these talented guys that went on to be big names in wrestling, but, you know, they're wrestling in front of, you know, 30 people in Bellevue at that terrible building with the halfway house. So I think that's my pick. What say you, Mike? What would you say?
That's a strong answer. I can't provide that kind of depth that you can, for sure. I mean, the 2004 era for me is unmatchable, almost by anyone. Like, that's the peak for me. That was also my peak interest in indie wrestling and specifically IWA. And, you know, you talked about those times where Ian would book a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday show. And, you know, I'm out here in California. I'm not watching that stuff. So months later, I'd have to decide what I'm buying on Smart Mark Video. And I'm not trying to buy 5 DVDs. So I'd have to pick and choose the ones with the best matchups. Or, you know, the Saturday was a given. But of the other 3-4 shows, what am I going to buy? Right. And it came down to looking at the matches and seeing, okay, this is a cool matchup. I want to see that. Like, I have to see this one, you know. So there was really a no-lose situation in those shows in, like, the 04 era. So for sure, that's top for me. Bottom, I can't give, you know, a qualified assessment because I haven't seen a lot of the stuff that you have, and specifically the dark day stuff. So I'll just follow your lead on that. But there are definitely, I mean, I think even through the dark days, there were, like you said, shows with a big name or shows with a great match or shows, you know, with a great roster and a guy coming up and stuff like that. So I think there's a lot of good in all of it. But yeah, for sure, best for me is 04.
Right, right. I would say.
One question I did have on this show, I think Staples at the Rejects, right? 2018 era, they're pretty much on every show.
Yeah, they had just the Rejects and Ian had a weird relationship where they would be around and then they would leave, and then, like, they had just done the Candido Cup the week before, so they were kind of on the good side
and just not on this show.
Just not on this show. Yeah,
yeah, that makes sense. Okay, yeah, I was just curious. You know, it's one of those things that you had mentioned too. You don't, with the reputation that IWA, sometimes you don't really want to be the IWA guy in a lot of cases. And I know you can relate with that more than any of the wrestlers could. But it kind of sticks you in a hole, and you're like, oh, you know, this guy's the IWA guy. And if right. You're trying to be successful in the business, you probably don't want to be that guy. If you're trying to look outward, you're trying not to be that guy. But you also understand the value that IWA has and the impact that it could have on your career. So I'm sure there was a lot of that, specifically with those guys and some of those of that same era that were trying to go on to, you know, bigger things.
Right, right, for sure. Yeah, I think, you know, it's crazy to look back and see MJF in this shitty fucking flea market. You know, there's blood-stained floors and glass everywhere and, you know, all the essential IWA pieces of the puzzle, and now he's, you know, one of the most famous wrestlers in the world. Just crazy to look back.
300 pounds and Jack.
Right.
Other thing, you mentioned the car museum, right, and that same flea market.
Yep.
I feel like the other corner where all those weapons are should be blocked off itself and charged admission for that, and call it the deathmatch weapon museum, because there was a little bit of everything, right? You got the shopping cart, the barbed wire, the ring board, the fan, the, you know, everything is there. It's just a dumping ground of shit covered in probably someone else's blood and broken glass and all kinds of fun stuff. And I feel like the value of that is at least equal to the value of some guy's personal car collection that you could probably see in any given mall parking lot.
Right, right. Yeah, the...
opportunity missed, Ian.
The only thing worthwhile on that exit nowadays is a pilot station with the worst McDonald's in it of all time. I do know
that. Imagine that as a selling point. You could charge admission to this corner of the flea market, have fans go pick out whatever weapon they want, and have the individual that used it personally sign it. There's value in that. There could have been a ton of money made.
Yeah, we definitely joked around, like, hey, we should, like, make a booth of, like, cookie pans and, right? You know, chairs and stuff like that. Yeah, we definitely missed the boat on that one.
Hey, that's a whole thing now. Like, people want that stuff, and you wouldn't even have to pay to dispose of it.
Right, right, right.
Like, people would pay you to take it away. People would pay to take that massive ring board out of your building and not fill up your dumpster that you would have to pay to have it.
Right.
I remember years and years ago out here in BTW, they brought out Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Mm-hmm.
So the obvious thing to have people get signed is 2x4s, right? That's Hacksaw's right. thing. So rather than like full-length 2x4s, they took a 2x4 and they chopped off probably like 12-inch segments of it and sold them for like $35 signed. And it was the Hell funniest yeah. shit I'd ever seen.
When I met Abdullah the Butcher, I got a wooden fork signed by him.
Oh, yeah.
Like the decorative, like, wooden forks.
That's it.
And he was signing it, and I think Honest John was, like, his manager at the time, was like, that's a really good idea. Like, he had never thought of it.
Hell
you
yeah.
know, and you have, you know, the whole plate of the fork with the prongs to, like, put your signature, so you got a pretty big enough thing, and then you have the handle. Dude. I don't know if he ever did that, but he definitely should have.
Go buy a dozen metal forks at Walmart. It's probably like $3.
Abdullah the Butcher is the first entry into the Deathmatch Hall of Fame for TOS weekend this year.
Ooh, that's a big name.
Yeah, so hopefully he shows up, unlike Sabu, to the Indie Wrestling Hall of Fame. What else you got going on nowadays, Mike? Got anything fun in the...
I do. We just did the John Wayne Murdoch figure auction.
Yes, we just did it. Sarah Flowers was the winner of that auction, and she donated $500, which we were able to split between Murdoch and the Bun Bun Brigade out of the Kentucky area. I think with fees and all that stuff, both got $245. So that was very exciting for me to be able to help out some bunnies, help out a deathmatch wrestler, and get the Rough Figures John Wayne Murdoch to someone that will love and appreciate it. Sarah actually has a bunny tattoo made up like John Wayne Murdoch on her person. So just
How
goes
awesome
to show,
that?
Yeah, just goes to
win,
show
win,
you.
Win.
She was the one that needed that. She was the perfect, you know, customer for that figure, if you ask me.
I think that's a win-win-win-win situation. I don't see a loss in that. And that, you know, she got something cool. We got to donate a little bit of money. Got John some money. Got the Rough figure out there in the public. And, yeah, it was fun. I love doing stuff like that. It brings my heart joy and gives me motivation for doing crazy ass figures.
Definitely.
The thing that I just finished up this week was it started off as a project just to pop you, but Andy Kaufman, Mattel Elite Custom, should be up probably around the same time this podcast is up, if I ever get around taking pictures and posting it. So that'll be up. If there's any Memphis wrestling fans interested in a new figure, or comedy fans interested in Andy Kaufman, or what have you. It will be available in a couple of days here, if I can ever get off my ass to do the photos and post it. So
there you go.
Just the typical life grind.
Right, the Rough Figures eBay account, or you can just search Andy Kaufman Mattel Elite, and I'm sure it will pop up. Like you said, regular life grind. I mentioned it earlier. Had a scare with an allergic reaction to new antibiotics. So I am on the right path now, but last Wednesday I was taken to the emergency room and making sure my throat wasn't closing up. So that was a ton of fun there.
And I told you to make sure that the hospital staff knew that you made all your money with your throat and let them wonder what that meant.
Right, right. Yeah, I kept mentioning that, like, hey, I'm a commentator. I need to be able to talk. So obviously this show will come out after this weekend. But this weekend I have Unsanctioned Pro in Columbus, Ohio. You can catch the replay on Triller TV. And then I have Pawcade on Sunday in Jeffersonville. The replay of that will be on Triller TV in the very near future. I just updated my calendar, and I've gotten some more bookings lately. So to run down my current schedule, next week, next Sunday, the first ever steel cage match in Grindhouse Pro Wrestling history between Clayton Cannon putting up his Grindhouse Pro title against the career of Birdo with Hippo. In your main event of Grindhouse Rise, that is on 4/28. On May 3rd, I am going to be in Georgetown, Kentucky for Generation Next Pro Wrestling Talons Up at the Great Crossing High School. Check out their social media. Ricky Morton's booked for that. Kenzie Page, Kylie Page, Myron Reed, a bunch of names already signed for that card. I believe Wildcat Chris Harris will be wrestling on the show as well. So, loaded show for that one. May 10th, I will be at Paradigm Pro Wrestling helping produce a lot of fun stuff. They got the Carnies. They got a bunch of people already signed. Let me see if I can click on this link real quick. Calvin Tankman, Alex Daniels against Tom Lawler, Billy Starks against Alexis Littlefoot, AJ Gray, Calvin Tankman, the Carnies, Max Zero, Shaw Mason, A-Game, Joseph Alexander, plus many more of your Paradigm favorites. That's on May 10th. On May 11th, I will be making my return to Evansville, Indiana for the debut of Hooligan Championship Wrestling, Ascending the Queendom, which is an all-women show with Masha Slamovich and Kenzie Page, Kylie Page, just all women on that show. The afternoon before that show, there is a Memphis wrestling convention that I'm very excited to be going to. Get to meet Dave Brown and Austin Idol and people like that. 5/18, I'm back at Unsanctioned Pro at Ace of Cups in Columbus, Ohio. 5/26, I'm back at Grindhouse. 6/15, back at Ace of Cups for Columbus, Ohio's Unsanctioned Pro. And then 6/29... I will be in Lafayette, Indiana for a show called Every Child Wins featuring Chris Candido. Jesus Christ, I wish. Shane Douglas, Sandman, Francine, Fonzie, and then a lot of independent wrestling talent. Trey Lamar, Don't Die Miles, David Ali, Heather Monroe, GPA, Lainey Luck. Just a lot of great talent. Eric Dillinger, Josh Crane, Sam Beal, Sage Phillips, Trevor Outlaw, Dale Patricks. Just a loaded show at the end of June for me in Lafayette, Indiana. It will be myself, Zane Paisley, and Ned Rolzma doing commentary. I hope I'm saying his name correctly. If you don't recognize the name, he was one of Marshall's brothers on How I Met Your Mother. He is a super wrestling fan and a friend of Shane Douglas. So he will be adding some color analytics to the show on June 29th with me and Zane Paisley in Lafayette, Indiana. And then that's all my dates for right now. I haven't figured out what I'm doing yet in July. So Yeah, that's what I got going on. I don't think I have anything else. Obviously, we've done a 2018 show for this month, so we will be going back in the calendar and probably do something, you know, from 1996 to like 2006 or something. Something a little bit older so we can have some more insight and have some more stories for the podcast. Anything else you got to say, Mr. Mike Ruff?
No, I don't think so. If anyone has any suggestions for shows in that time period, preferably those on IWTV, that would be great. And we could get rolling on that and figure out a show for the next month.
Right, absolutely, yeah. For May of between 1996 and 2006, that would be great.
I think we got our eyes on a June show or possibly
yes.
We talked about, so that may be covered. But for sure, throw those recommendations out for May.
And even if they're not in the month that we're in, if you have suggestions, we'll put it on a list and see if we can't knock it out for you. Maybe as we go along here, maybe we can start knocking out more than one of these a month and really get down to the nitty gritty, but we'll have to see how that goes. I have started a Mid-South Memories picture archive. So if you have any photos that is not widely available of IWA Mid-South from 1996 to the very end in 2022, send them to me. If they are physical photos, I will do the work of scanning them in and return your photos back to you. So, yeah, if you want to help preserve some history, there is another way you can do so. So
we've even been looking at some historical custom figure images from that time,
yes.
too, like some stuff that Beatty's done. Some of the stuff that other guys have done for these guys of that time period, and they're super cool for me to see too. It draws, you know, takes us back to our childhood and the origins of our friendship.
Yeah, definitely
sharing some of those memories. So
yeah,
if you got any of that stuff too, we love looking at that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. If you're an old customizer, let us know and let us see your scanned photos that everybody used to do with the scanner. I think I'm going to throw those figure pictures in like a miscellaneous folder just so we have them and, you know, they're not forgotten to the sands of time.
It's fun, man, looking at like a Chucky Smooth, you know, Jax custom from, you know, 2001, 2002. It's
right.
Not something you see every day. So if y'all are collecting any of those photos or if you have the figures yourself, that would be cool to see too. We're always open to checking that stuff out, too.
So, with that said, we've talked a lot here, and we will see you next month here on Mid-South Memories. That's all I gotta say! I'm out of here!